listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys and girl.
Over here on my right,
we've got guys. I'm not the girl.
Let that be known straight away.
It's true. I've seen the disc.
We've got the one and only Martin Page.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Mike. Hi.
Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon. Scott, good to see you. Next to him, we've got Diego Stucco.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's good to see you, Diego.
Good to see you too, Mike.
And next to him joining us, we've got the one and only, the lovely Heather Haley.
Ooh.
Heather.
God bless you.
Heather. And then next to Heather, we have a voice from the past. Coming back to visit with us, we've got Hez McMurray. Hez. Hez. And next to Hez, we've got Bobby Osinski. Bobby.
Hi, Mike. All right.
And finally, the one, the only, the Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast, Rob Arbertson.
Yeah, Rob!
Hello, everyone. Yeah. Hello, it's so good to be back.
That's what I'm talking about.
I feel like you need to come up with a sound every time you say his name.
Yeah, you need to.
Hey, this is show 106 for Rob.
Woo!
106. So, nice. Yeah, he is the Iron Man. First of all, man, I've missed you guys, all of you. It's been a while. We took a little break. We had some people with some family issues, and then I took a vacation that was definitely needed. And it was about 6 weeks in between shows. So
wow,
I missed all you guys.
I missed you
too.
But how long will it seem between shows on the web? It'll just seem like a few weeks, right?
Yeah, it'll be about 4 weeks.
So it won't be that. Oh, is it going to be that long?
Yeah, it'll be about 4 weeks.
Oh, we're in trouble.
So the next podcast we should do. From the swimming pool.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was worried about tonight that we weren't going to have a lot of panel members. And look at full house.
Packed house.
Packed house.
That's right.
So there's a lot of things that I want to talk about. On the second half, we're going to talk about Vibe. And that's per request from one of our listeners, Mark Ruffino. He wrote a really nice email. And he mentioned talking about Vibe. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's not a bad thing to talk about. So, and we've got the king of Vibe. Well, a bunch of kings of Vibe, because really everybody I'm looking at all has to.
We all have mojo. Yes.
We all have mojo.
Why do you think I came tonight?
There's a vibe in the air.
But I want to talk about a couple things really quick. Number one, I recently took a vacation, and part of my vacation I traveled on a train from LA to Chicago, and let me tell you. If you ever want,
you know, they have airplanes now.
Yes, I do. Okay. We flew back. But if you ever want a boost in creativity, if you ever want to get your creative juices flowing, just get out and just see something new. Yeah. I mean, really, it was really inspiring to travel across the country and to see the deserts and then go through the mountains and
the train tracks and the trees.
It was pretty awesome. It was really inspiring. And you know, it just, when you see things, you know, different things that you haven't seen before, it kind of puts everything in a unique perspective.
How's
and
the noise? Really,
how many
new trains?
It was. We left at 6:15 on a Saturday, and we got there at about 3:15 on a Monday. Yeah,
that's so cool.
So
I've
it was two nights.
Train.
Yeah.
So
and,
the question is all the rhythm of
train.
Music that you do? Like,
no,
come on.
You know what? You don't really hear it. You don't notice it. I mean, there is definitely noise, but you know, it just fades out into the background.
Are you ever able to get off that train?
Yeah, you can get off, but you have your room.
While it's running,
three days in an 8x8 room.
No, you can get out. You can walk around. They have a restaurant. They got a cafe. And they've got showers, so believe me, it's pretty nice.
In five steps range, everything is there.
Hey, it's not for anybody, only for cool people.
There you go.
Well, you know, I've traveled a lot in train. It's pretty common in Italy.
Yeah, over in Europe, but train travel is great. You know, it's just, and I had a great little system. I brought along a little PC Alienware with a small little Akai keyboard, and it was awesome.
You never really walked away from your work.
Oh, no. I absolutely, when I go into work mode on my time, it's a vacation. Because, you know, when you're creative, and I'm sure everybody can agree with this, you know, creative people have to create. And whether you're a songwriter and you write a song for yourself on your time, or, you know, whether you're an author and you write a short story on your own, or whatever, I just find most creative people that I know, they create when they have the ability to. I mean, like you, Scott. I mean, you put your music studio together, and you're over there blowing up, you know, buildings and
I'm
guns.
So jealous.
And
it's
what do you
cool.
do in your spare time? You play your guitars,
that's
right?
That's right.
You know.
That's true.
So. Except for Rob, he does everything.
Well, it's because I have no spare time, so I do everything during my work time.
But literally, I mean, I know all you guys, and all you guys on your spare time, you do creative stuff. And some are different disciplines. You know, if you're a songwriter, sometimes you like to take photos, or if you're, you know, photographer, some people like to do music. I mean, you just have to create. So
I like to take naps.
Creatively,
though.
It's who you can take a nap with.
There you go.
But it was pretty awesome, and I just recommend that if you guys want to, you know, and guys, people that are listening, if you ever get in a creative block, just go take a trip, take a short trip, go someplace different, and it really does make a difference. Moving on, while we were gone, there's a lot of cool things that happened in the tech world that we'll just talk about briefly. One is Matt came out with a new operating system, Lion. And I know most of you guys work on Macs here, but is anybody in any hurry to upgrade?
I just kept getting the Sweetwater ad saying, whatever you do, don't install it yet.
Many emails from companies saying we're not ready yet.
Yeah, it's definitely, it is a major overhaul of the way like file management happens and version management happens.
Right.
And it's a really scary thing to be the first one on the block to try it. Don't try it until every single application you use says it's ready for it.
Yeah.
Because it's not a subtle change.
It's what OS 9 to OS 10 is.
Right.
OS 10 to...
Well, they said they removed Rosetta for good, so it's not there anymore. All compatible applications that were based on that, they can work.
You know what? If you get a chance, there was a keynote speech. It's about 2 hours long from the Worldwide Developers Conference that they had. And it's really informative. It's really long, too. And they talk about the iOS stuff as well as Lion and the iCloud and all kinds of other stuff. But it's pretty informative. But if you watch it, if it's still up there, you'll see that Lion is really a major change. It's going to change the way people think about documents in any application they use. Like, you don't have to save anymore.
So how will it... I didn't mean...
On the cloud. It'll be connected.
What's what?
What will it do, and what if somebody were to actually...
Well, what's going to happen is because some of the most basic things about the way an operating system works are changed, like how you save files, how you go back to other versions of files, where your files are stored. There's a lot of very basic fundamental stuff that if you're running an old application that was written before any of this new stuff was figured out, it's just going to be looking in the wrong place for things, and it's going to cause huge conflicts.
Yeah.
And that is just going to lead to lost data and not being able to open files in the future, and it's just not worth it.
No.
Right. The whole point is the operating system, it's not supposed to be this huge challenge for you. You're supposed to, when you finally do upgrade, you should get all the benefits of it and not have to deal with any nightmares.
And
right now, there are going to be a lot of nightmares.
Yeah.
And they also took the operating system from the iPad, and they took the operating system from the Mac and combined them.
Really?
So there's that whole, like, how do you interface with it?
It's
huge.
There's some cool stuff that people are going to want. Like, there's all kinds of new gestures you can do on touch screens, and there's new ways to control the screen. And things definitely look a lot nicer, which makes it tempting to upgrade.
Right.
Do not do it. Well, it is so not worth it if your stuff doesn't work.
Did you try it, right?
I would tell you, I've actually tried Lion, and it's... My advice is exactly what Rob's saying. If you have a work computer, if you do anything that you need your computer up and running for music or sound design or film, don't upgrade. Keep it, but keep it the way it is.
6 months to a year from now, things will.
But if you're buying a new Mac, go ahead and buy it, because the new operating system actually is, it's pretty cool to use the new gestures, the way you move around the screen, it's just, there's some really cool things about it. It looks great. But you just realize that you're going to buy a new computer and you're not going to have much to run on it music-wise for a little bit. Mm. I mean, I'm sure GarageBand and I'm sure some of the staples will be there.
They have those mostly working. And the thing is, in Lion, you can run applications full screen and you can have multiple applications running full screen. And it really is tempting.
It's so cool.
And the new email system that comes with it is just unbelievably gorgeous.
Yeah, it is.
There's a lot of stuff that makes you want to go to it. But then you realize, if you run Pro Tools or you run any other audio system, until they say it's going to work, just know it's really not going to work. Don't think you're going to be the first to try it and it's just going
to
work.
What happens if you have to buy a new computer?
It's going to be one of those periods like it has been in the past where you're forced to buy a computer that will not work with your software.
And my guess is I know, like,
that's happened before with Apple plenty
of times. Right, and I've seen a lot of times when they change operating systems, if you buy a computer in a music store, a lot of times they will install the older operating system in there. They'll have it.
If it'll run, though, is the question. What? Because the newer hardware that's going to be coming out later this summer, a lot of people are probably going to be forced to buy computers. This happened before, especially in the Pro Tools world. They're going to be forced to buy a computer that will not work with the software you want.
When they went to OS X, when they went to there, it was the same thing. You bought a computer that had an operating system, OS X, that was not compatible with your 9.0 stuff. And it was a little bit of time before it all came over.
This won't be quite as bad as that, because from OS 9 to OS 10 was a completely different architecture going from the OS 9 stuff to basically Unix. Mm-hmm. This is not that. Snow Leopard basically was a transitional step between Leopard and Lion. Mm-hmm. These names, by the way, they just call it 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever. It'd be so much better. But
next one is going to be what?
Who knows? Alley cat. But the thing is, the change from OS 9 to OS 10 was a whole rewriting of the understructure. Now, Snow Leopard did a lot of the preparation work to let Lion work. And a lot of people didn't upgrade to Snow Leopard because it didn't seem like it got them anything. And in a lot of ways, it didn't. But it definitely laid the groundwork for Lion to be able to work. So Lion is not going to be as much of a nightmare as OS 9 to 10 was.
Yeah.
But try to install it on your Pro Tools rig right now and tell me it's not a nightmare.
Yeah, all that to say is, caution, don't upgrade yet. Wait till other things are. Because even if you're host, like let's say, you get Live and you install Live on your computer and Live is working, it's the plugins that are going to give you a problem if you have a ton of plugins. They have to be able to be compatible, and your drivers,
especially
a lot of
from small developers that they can't really.
They're
keep
really
up
struggling.
With. Yeah.
Although, you know what? If their stuff worked on Snow Leopard properly, there's not that much they have to do to make it work on Lion. Generally, if their stuff was properly written on Snow Leopard, it runs on Lion fine. Mm-hmm. It's stuff where they were doing little tricks and cutting corners that those tricks and corner cuttings aren't going to work anymore in Lion. So if they wrote stuff that was specifically like perfect and didn't try to do anything tricky, it's probably going to work in Lion without much change.
Which means nothing in audio actually works then.
Well, no. Right. No, Logic works. Logic does work. Yeah.
And, well, that's their product.
Well, that's their
exactly.
Product.
Yeah. Exactly. So if you want an environment or you work in Logic, just know that Logic...
It's so not worth it.
I've had more crashes on Snow Leopard than I've ever had on any Mac.
Really?
Yeah, it crashes once every second day. But...
Wow.
Yeah, sometimes 2-3 times in a day.
So is this a machine upgrade tomorrow?
Well, was this a machine that was legacy operating system that got upgraded over time, or did it start out as a Snow Leopard machine?
No, legacy.
Because I found legacy, I've had some nightmarish problems with Snow Leopard on machines. They were mostly Pro Tools machines, but they had been, I think I had them even before Leopard, then they became Leopard, then they went to Snow Leopard, and things would seem to work, but then Pro Tools, I'd have all these weird permission problems and crashes and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But I then put in a new hard drive, formatted it as just Snow Leopard from the start, and it's been rock solid. I think there are definitely some legacy.
The preferences thing that keeps going crazy.
Which thing?
The Pro Tools preferences that keeps...
Well, a lot of times that's legacy. If it started as a Leopard Pro Tools, try just doing a new hard drive, and I had those problems go away.
The big thing that we found that's recurable, because we got 200 systems, and that is if you open and close lots of sessions... In Pro Tools Snow Leopard, you will get the screen of doom, screen of death.
Have you ever had?
So if you open up like 5 or 6 sessions, like let me check that session. Now let me shut that down.
You know what?
Let me open that one.
That's not normal. That has to be an issue.
We have it on machines. It's like every what you have to do is just do a restart. Mm-hmm. If you do it a lot, and then just reboot the machine.
But I'm saying I'll often open 70 or 80 sessions a day, especially if we're going between a lot of commercials. Yeah. It's not something that is part of a basic Pro Tools problem. It has to be something to do with a combination of software.
I bet you it's your network, because we get network
issues. It can be network related.
That affect my Pro Tools over at RemX all the time. So, well, anyhow, all this to say is let's just, you know, use a little bit of caution and don't upgrade yet until Rob tells you.
And also, by the way,
you may not want to wait until I tell you to.
It's been a little bit buggy, but it's kind of cool. We've been getting the NVIDIA cards that are 5870s.
Uh-huh.
And they're basically three outputs. So we can run three monitors at once. And what's great is we run Pro Tools on two monitors, and then the third monitor is our picture.
Right.
Cool.
And it's really great, and it's been working. I mean,
you know what, though? That could be one of the problems. As soon as you do anything that steps out of the norm, I mean, when you each display that you add to a computer adds a huge amount of memory addressing, and there's like a master full resolution that the software knows about as your entire usable space. And it could be that once you get above a certain limit, things aren't tested that well. It's like as soon as you're going to be a pioneer with that kind of stuff, you just never know. When you start having problems, you never know whether you can blame it or not.
It's your fault.
The only thing, if you use a three-monitor system, a lot of times, what actually gets pretty funny, is everyone turns on their two monitors. And then this, you've got a screen. You go, oh, now I need video. So you turn the video on. And there's a sensor in the computer. So it goes, ah, we got another monitor. And then what happens is it rearranges all your monitors.
Yeah.
So let's say your left one was your main monitor. Now it may not be. Mm-hmm. So then you have to start playing this game of whack-a-mole, where you turn it on and off monitors until it rotates to the point where it makes sense.
It's like looking in a
mirror. You don't change your chairs or anything.
You just sit and you go, what?
That might be easier to do.
Yeah. Everything blanks out for a second, comes back in a different setup.
By the way, just in the, I don't know why I'm defending the computer industry, but they would always say, always turn on your monitors before your computer, and that's why. Because any monitors that are going to sense there's a bunch of different standards, but any monitors that are going to sense, or computers that are going to sense which monitors are hooked up, you're going to confuse them. It happens a lot with switchers, too. Like in my studio, a lot of times I'll have one monitor on a machine, or two or three. You know, there are different workstations, and everybody can access the same machines from different locations in the studio. That confuses the hell out of the computer because it doesn't know which one am I supposed to service, especially if you have multiple monitors at different resolutions, because it'll think, okay, monitor one's a cinema display. Oh, now this one's a super VGA, whatever. It's really good if you can in your studio to have it set up where the monitors come on first, then the computer, and you don't switch them while it's on. As soon as you switch them while it's on, you run into weird.
I want to buy a notebook, like a regular paper notebook. That's what I want.
You'll never have it where you write something on one page and it accidentally shows up on another one.
Exactly. Right. Well, unless you press
it. Unless you push it. Right. Yeah.
Well, all that to say, don't upgrade right now.
Good. Yeah, just stay away from computers in general.
Yes.
So the other thing I want to talk about, and I don't know how many of you guys know about this, but I recently got Spotify, signed up for Spotify. And
Spotify?
And
Spotify?
I'll tell you, Spotify is, and Bobby, you can tell me if I'm correct. Spotify is, think Pandora, iTunes, and old Napster all rolled into one.
Wow.
You know? And they have a free version, and then they have a couple different tiers of paid versions. And essentially what you can do is once you sign up, you can go into Spotify, and like Pandora, you can do a search for an artist, and up will come...
Like Martin Page.
Exactly.
You better.
In fact, that's the default.
Should be first choice every
time.
That's
the default in the software if you don't specify another artist.
Well, here, I'm going to go right now. I input Martin Page, and sure enough, Martin Page comes up with a...
Bloody right.
Martin Page comes up, and then you can create a playlist, and the music is a higher quality.
Got a picture of me with that was taken about like 10 years ago. Yeah.
But you can create a playlist of Martin Page songs and a bunch of different songs, and you can leave it and you can play it, and
that's so cool.
And I believe if you pay for it, you can play some of the stuff offline.
Please pay for it when you put Martin Page in. Please
that's
pay.
Right. Support your
it's
local
probably
artists.
You have to have a Spotify player. You got to have the Spotify software.
But
to
you
play
download
it.
The files? How does it work? Anybody knows?
It streams unless you pay for it, and then it will cache.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
But you're basically playing off of their server. Right. It's just like going to YouTube and watching videos basically without the videos.
Exactly. Right. And it's but the one thing that is pretty cool is the quality is it's not 128, it's like 312.
So it's 320.
Yeah, 320. Oh, okay. Yeah. It sounds really good, and I was when I first signed up for it, it was really kind of cool in the fact that I could find some pretty obscure stuff. It didn't have some stuff, but it had other stuff. And it was pretty exciting at first, but then, you know, I really liked it, but then I'm thinking, you know, if it can really commoditize music. I mean, if anybody can do anything there free, on your iPhone, you can get the Spotify app. I don't know. It's a double-edged sword because I will admit that when I was looking for different groups, like one of the groups that I really like was a band from the 80s and 90s called Giant. Dan Huff, who's a really big producer, that was his band with his brother. And so I went looking for Giant. Sure enough, there it was, and I was playing it, and it totally got me vibe that I went to iTunes and I bought the Giant album, although it didn't have their first album, it had their second album, which I didn't have. And so I could see that, and that was kind of cool. But at the same time, there was other artists that I would look up and I'd play, and it was just enough for me just to play it on their free player because I got my little fix. And so it's like, I don't know if I like it or if I hate it or what. I don't know how to feel about it because in one way, it kind of encouraged me to buy, Giant's album. But and another some of the other artists I was looking at, I got my fix.
I think that this is the process that you just described has more to do with the fact that we know that there's a lot of music available out there. Yeah. Not really the technology we're using. It's the point in history where we are now.
Right.
The fact that you know that you can listen for hours and hours and hours, and right. still there's going to be hours and hours, so you don't have...
And the free version, there is commercials, just so you guys know. It'll play commercials for other bands. It'll play commercials for brands and stuff like that. So,
so is that Spotify?
Spotify.
Yeah.
How much does it cost? Am I allowed to ask?
I'm only signed up for the free version.
It's $4.95 and $9.95.
Yeah.
A month. What's the difference?
A month.
The $9.95 allows you to play offline. And I don't know how they govern that, and quite frankly, I never will because I'm not going to pay for it.
Well, they expect there's a million subscribers already in Europe. It started out of Finland, I think, and it actually. Caused the piracy there to go down. And they've done all sorts of studies to find out that this, in fact, happened. But then what happened was it took off in Europe. And for the last 2 years, it's been the talk of, you know, the digital music realm. Now what they're expecting over here, the reason why it took them so long to happen in the States is because they couldn't get the licenses from the major labels. And it's only in the last month that they finally signed the last one. But now they're expecting to have as much as 50 million signed up. Part of that is because they did a deal with Facebook. So you're going to be able to access it to within Facebook. And there's also something new from Facebook coming out called Facebook Vibes. Oh, cool. Facebook Vibes is their music social network within a social network, but it's
what do your
also
friends listen to?
But Spotify is supposedly the engine for that,
right?
So Spotify is going to be the big deal here in the next year.
The interesting thing about Spotify, though, is that a lot of independent releases are not on it. For instance, when I searched for Martin Page, In the Temple of the Muse is not on it, but In the House of Stone and Light is, which was
a label
release.
Thank you.
That's because of the independent.
Right. Yeah. So, I can tell you right off the bat, you're not going to be able to find a lot of really cool independent artists on this thing.
Well,
but you know where you can find that, though, is Mog.
Right.
And Mog is the... They think now that because Spotify has such high visibility, it will also bring along Mog with it, or RDO, or any of those other ones.
What's Mog? M-O-G?
M-O-G, is the other one. RDO is the other one. There's several subscription networks. Of course, Rhapsody's been around for a while.
And are they all pretty much the same?
They're all the same flavor, more or less. But the whole big deal has always been what kind of licenses have they signed with the major labels? Now that they've pretty much signed them, it really doesn't mean anything to an artist because the labels are going to keep it all.
Right.
So, but the next deals that happen, the attorneys are smart enough to say, okay, we want a piece of that action. But right. the current deals aren't really going to help anybody because the labels are going to take it all. And they'll be piddling
so
pennies.
So the artists
don't
get a digital download,
Well, they'll get their pennies.
Mechanical-esque?
No, because it's a stream. And a stream pays an artist, but it pays 0.0012% of a cent. So it's 0.012 cents right now, which is going up to 0.0021 cent by 2050. I just wrote a book about this.
Oh, what's the book called?
That's so interesting.
It's the second edition of Music 3.0.
Yeah. So
we all need to read that.
It's got a huge memory as well. Remember all the numbers.
Let me ask Martin, as an artist, how do you feel about these kind of services? And I know you don't use them, but just the concept itself. I mean, are you worried about it? Does it intrigue you, or you just don't know enough about it?
You know, I think.
Should I ask Diane?
Yeah, ask the management. Yeah, ask the lawyer. Now, you know, I would say the word you said is intrigued by it because there's nothing I can do about it. It's what's happening. It's what it is. It is what the world is going to be. So in a way, you know, like anything else, you've got to learn to, you know, take it in, develop around it, and learn. But it seems to me to be a very, very scary place for writers and for particularly authors, independent writers, because everything's changing so rapidly. To keep control of it and to understand it and see where the deals are coming from, it's very, very hard. You've almost got to stop and look at everything. It's moving so fast right. and go, you know, now it's not MySpace, now it's Facebook, now it's Twitter, now it's Spotify.
No, that's Google yeah. Plus.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. That's right, yeah. Google Plus. Yeah. Do you feel like you're losing control of your music? Do you feel
you've never
had that much control, but it just seems like now there's so many different, at least you knew who the enemy was, right? Yeah. You knew the labels, you right. knew they were out there. And nowadays it seems like you don't, there's like these ninja enemies that you don't know if you like them or
you know, I tell you what, it's erratic, you know, and it's all over the place and it's all unsettling. But for say if you were a huge artist, someone like, you know, David Bowie or something, his people will find out exactly where all these roads are going and he'll be watched over and Paul McCartney will find that it's all happening and they'll say to him, you know, you should do a bit of this, you should do a bit of that, put a video on YouTube, do that, come back, go forward. But for the independent artist, it's really, really tough. And you've almost got to wait to see, particularly for someone like me, is what works for me, what is the strongest and lasting for a while, and what's going to be solid for you for a while, you know. But you can't really take anything too serious.
Right.
Because in my day, when I was first started, and for most artists of that time, you were, you know, you saw your records in the bins, in the shops, and you had a record company and you had an accountant and you had radio play, which we don't have anymore.
Right.
So it's all changed so much. For someone like me who just wants to write songs and get on with still being creative, as I try to find the temperature,
right,
hence being here with you guys, you tend to pick up so much knowledge about what is going to last for maybe a year and be worth moving towards, you know. So it's unsteady waters, you know. It's not solid,
right?
But it could be brilliant or it could be awful. You right. don't know, you know. It's like setting out on a bit of a strange journey. But this is what things like this, the podcast, are so useful for, you know. So what you were just talking about, Bob, you know, you go, okay, well, this is what's maybe going to be the most solid for a while.
Right.
I think in anything in life, you sort of look for what you think is going to be a little bit lasting. You know?
Well, yeah, I can tell you what most artists are trying to do right now, and they're forgetting about anything that has to do with record releases or any of that, and they're going for television placement more than anything. Movies are more difficult, but television is easier because you have, you know, 150 different channels. But the problem is everybody's getting hip to it. Mm-hmm. So there's so much competition
I use my iPhone. I'll be watching a commercial, and I go, oh, my gosh, I'd love that song. Yeah. Who is that song? And
I just have to say, as a songwriter, that my royalty statement that comes in is like minuscule with radio now.
Yeah.
And everything for all the movies that I had songs in through the 80s and 90s, my whole royalties. Yeah. And you know that all the writers are going, like, get a song and a film.
Well, if you're interested on the TV side, if you look at Supernatural and some of the WB, it's all 70s, 80s, and 90s music.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you're going to hear all these, like, Blue Oyster Cult and Led Zeppelin.
Right.
And all this rocky, you know, rock-type stuff.
But you know what's happened that's changed, actually, is music supervisors are looking at themselves as if they're A&R men. Mm-hmm. They're looking for brand new material from brand new artists and bands. And it's almost a point of... I found this act.
Oh, sure.
So well, it's really changing.
If you look at So You Think You Can Dance,
yep.
Gaga started there. There was one artist that they found the song, they liked it. She was nobody. She was a waitress, I think, in Studio City.
Wow.
And they really liked it. It all of a sudden hit the charts, and she performed live on it. And they said, hey, we found this artist.
Right.
And I think, yes, there's a strategy of finding new music material. And then helping...
Well, yeah, even with voiceover and on camera, I was told by several people, they're like, well, Heather, you really need to get something on YouTube. So it's not really about my... I go, well, can you go to my website? They're like, no, get something on YouTube. Right. Really get it out there. And I'm
start your own channel. Rob, you were going to...
Yeah, I'll weigh in on the Spotify thing. Because my reaction to Spotify is, and I knew about it when it was in, it's been popular in Europe for a while, it's just they couldn't get all the licenses figured out here. And it's just basically another way that music is being devalued. And I don't know that there's ever been a product on Earth before that every single person on Earth would say they can't live without it. And yet the value of it just continually goes down to zero, even though everybody still wants it just as much as they ever wanted
it.
That's
so profound, really.
But wait a second. When it was on the radio, did you think it was devalued then?
No, because back when radio was big, it was pushing you towards sales. But here's what I was going to say about the sales aspect of it. It's not the fact that you can get it and hear it easily, I don't think is what devalues it. I just think that the whole mindset of the consumer for music has been changed over time. Music used to be something that if you liked it, you could hear it a million times for free on the radio, but it was always sort of known that if you really like it, at some point you're going to buy it. You're going to hear it on the radio plenty, especially if it's
a
hit.
But you know why, though? Because you had a physical product, and it was something physical in your hand.
No, I understand that.
The fact that when you have a digital file... That's all gone away because there's no pride of ownership in a digital file.
No, that's true. That is true. And it's a bunch of things sort of happening at the same time that is leading to, you know, the music not being worth much.
But you know what?
Let me continue for a second, though. Like the study they did where they said that with Spotify, piracy went down. I can understand that because if you can hear the stuff for free anytime you want, there's no reason to pirate it.
That's
but,
right. Yeah.
But did sales go up? Probably not.
I believe so, but a tiny bit. But again, you're talking about a small country as well.
But here's what the next step of all this is. Because right now, a lot of artists realize that selling or that getting a license for use of your music in a TV commercial or a movie is sort of the brass ring that you're aiming for these days. I've had lots of friends who've had, you know, the weekly picks on iTunes and stuff, and so they'll sell like crazy for a little while. You know what? None of them have recouped the cost of making the product if they spent more than 10 or 15 grand. They're just not making the money back because there's so much stuff out there. Yeah, they get a little bit of focus for a while, but the thing is, you get a good license in a good commercial or movie, even for an unknown song for an unknown band. If it's a big enough product commercial, you know, they're putting dozens of thousands of dollars in your pocket, so that's valuable. But here's the problem. Once everybody knows what the brass ring is, then you have everybody aiming for it, and then that gets devalued.
That's exactly what's happening. Yeah.
That happened a lot with broadcast television. It used to be that you would see a commercial for a show, which in the industry is called a TV promo instead of a TV commercial. So you'd see a commercial for upcoming on the next, you know, whatever, Oprah or
Sanford
any,
and Sons.
It could be, well, it's not that long ago, but, you know, you'd see upcoming, and then a lot of times you'd see the bug in the corner, which is the text like on MTV where it shows you who the artist and who the song is. And then once Shazam came around and you didn't need to put the text on the screen, people could hold up their phone and find out what the song is. Back then, you have to realize that that was a massive thing. People were so fixated on it. Originally, the networks used to go out and look for music, and they'd actually pay you to use your music in that position. As time went on and people realized that's a great promotional tool, not only did the networks stop paying, but record companies started paying
to have their music used in those commercials. Sure. So it went from being something the networks valued and were willing to pay money for to something where they realize they hold all the cards.
It's a revenue stream. Yeah.
It's a huge revenue stream. And that is going to happen. Something like it is going to happen with commercials and films too, because you can still command pretty good money if they really want your song for one of those products. But if there's enough material out there and everybody is hitting them, you know, they might want your song and you might want $50,000, but there's a song they like almost as much and they'll take $20,000.
But it's happening already. I have a really good friend who has a music library, and he sells mostly to Fox and Fox mainly, and does a lot of stuff in all of Fox Sports, so he's very plugged in. And he was lamenting the fact yesterday that the budgets are so small that everything is about a half of what it was just a year ago. Yeah. So in other words, for a placement now, he's looking at half. And he said for a movie, it's ridiculous, where you know it's definitely in half, if not more.
It's worse than half, I would say. And it's a shame, actually, that Bobby Summerfield's not here tonight, because he and I have a very similar experience. We've worked for a lot of the same people over many years, and between us, we have thousands of cues in libraries, and we've both seen the checks for the exact same amounts of usage just collapse.
But I don't know if it's necessarily a shame, because Bobby and Martin together, really?
Well, okay, from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's the valuation of music is definitely, it's just a weird time right now, because...
But you know what? Go ahead. Just to say something. Here, when we talk from a musician's point of view, okay, and I'm 34 years old, and you guys are probably...
Watch it.
I'm not going to say anything about you.
29. We're
humble wisdom. She hit me with a look, okay? I won't say more than that.
That was
awesome.
I promise.
A couple years older.
But
let's say
a couple of years older.
Old enough
okay?
to be your friend.
But what I'm saying is, a 15 years old now, young guy, doesn't care at all about these things. It doesn't know anything about the dynamics we're talking about. And this is the guy that is dictating how the industry is going to work. Because if these kids, they don't care, they don't know, they cannot tell the difference between what it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago, why would the company spend the money to continue having a system that is not necessary anymore? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they found. There's been studies that have found that the devaluation of music from the standpoint of 12 to 24-year-olds has been... They don't consider it worth spending money on. They don't consider it... As a matter of fact, they feel that they've gotten it for free forever. Why should they buy it now?
Exactly, because the concept of devaluation doesn't exist with them. Even in musicians,
it's not devalued if there was no value to begin with. Yeah.
But you know what, though? Yeah. On the flip side, if you look at TV and where it's gone, and you look at cable especially, and you look at HBO spent $200 million to create The Pacific. Now, the thing is, that is subscription TV. The networks are all freaked out on the award shows because they went, none of us can spend that kind of money on a show. Of course you're going to win awards. HBO has been able to draw subscriptions in. So the question is, when you get big bands that say, hey, look, U2 is going to come out on blah, blah subscription, and we're going to do that. And then a couple big, big tentpole bands do that. The only place to get it is right there on that subscription. Then all of a sudden, it's kind of like a shopping center where you got the Walmart and then all the little stores that come in. Right. You get your big tentpoles to bring them in, then they listen to all of the other options that are available in a subscription type system.
But that's been the golden brass ring, actually, for the record labels.
But nobody's known how to do it.
Well, no, the record labels have wanted to do this, and they've tried on off and on, but they can't agree. First of all, they don't have anybody forward-looking there.
Right.
Every time they get... EMI had a great digital department. They had a great digital department. Gone now. Warner Brothers had a really good one. Gone now. Yeah. As soon as they get good at doing this, the heads of the label are, you know, they're still afraid of losing computers.
It's got to be a little bit like Moses. They got to go through the desert, and you got to get rid of your old people. Because they're used to doing business a certain way.
Yeah, you're absolutely
the
right.
The younger executives are going to come in. Some brilliant person, the Steve Jobs of music, is going to come in, figure out the solution and make a ton of money, and everyone's going to wonder why they didn't figure it out.
Hey, speaking of Moses, I'm just going to leave this. really quick, Rob, did you want
to? I just wanted to say one thing because I wanted to finish the point I was making earlier because I'm talking about all the doom and gloom and the devaluation of music and everything else. You might be a little surprised to hear me say this, but the next point I was going to make is I don't necessarily think that's bad. I think it's just the way it is, and it's the way things are going. But as an artist, number one, you should only be doing it because you can't imagine doing anything else. So the money is secondary anyway, theoretically.
Exactly, yeah.
There's a lot of people who have that a little bit twisted. But if you're a true artist and you really have something to say, you're going to say it no matter if anyone's even listening, okay? And a lot of that's gotten lost because it's way too easy to make music these days, and that's okay. But there are still plenty of ways to make money as a musician and as an artist. It's just not the same as it used to be.
No.
So the trick is, like, when drum machines came, the best drummers, or the ones who were going to continue working, were the ones who learned how to program drum machines, absolutely, not the ones who sat around saying, well, I give up because now I'm being replaced by a machine. The same kind of mentality is what's going to get you through this now. If the selling of your music as individual songs or albums isn't what's making money, then you just have to be a little clever and figure out what is. People are still going to see live music, probably more than they have in a while. You would probably know, Bobby, the statistics better than I do, but I've heard that the live performance world is doing okay. It's different the way they've packaged artists than tried to lure people to shows.
No, finally that's being hit. The last year especially it's being hit. And this year... in a bad way. The dollars are up, but the attendance is down.
Right.
And it's because of charging fewer shows
costing
more.
Can I just ask a question? It begs to ask how this all affects the new youth writing songs, the new bands that are being formed. As we just pointed out, you just said something about like the 12 to 24 year olds aren't, you know, interested at all. Now that's where all the bands are coming from and all the writers are.
It's not that they're not interested, it's that they don't feel they should pay for music.
They love it. They can't live without it.
How do you think that is trickling down to the creative people? I'm just interested what you feel there, Bob. Do you think it's like, you know, in the day of when we saw, you know, Elton John coming up, we saw Bowie coming up, we've seen these people just doing it. Now we don't see that so much, but not to. What do you think all this doom and gloom and this feeling of like music's just for free would affect the young writer that's coming up?
It has no effect on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. Zero.
I can tell you as a parent, both my daughters are into music and creative music. You know, there's a lot of doom and gloom, but I don't think there's been a time where people can feel like anybody can become a star, and not just a small star.
Exactly.
Celebrity is really accessible to the common person more so than it's ever been.
Well, reality
because of of YouTube.
Well, reality TV has also said
you're a viral video.
Anybody can be a celebrity.
I hate reality.
You know, but it also takes that it's not an actor or performer. Somebody can just be weird.
I think.
That was based for weird people also in the past, though. There was a niche for that.
The younger performers and the younger artists are seeing better avenues to make it bigger. Because when you were starting off, there was no YouTube. And so for you to think about becoming big worldwide, you were thinking playing in a club, getting a record deal, going on tour, and actually visiting these places. And nowadays, you know, I've got
My point is that around that time, a lot of great things happened. And then we had some extraordinary musicians coming through, like Jimmy Page, like Beck. Extraordinary that had done the Trenches. And I'm just wondering in this new place we're at, if those kinds of inspired kids see it the same way. So they do study their guitar. They do learn about communicating with people one-on-one. They do learn about how it is to work an audience instead of looking at a flat screen and saying, if somebody films me real quick for 20 minutes on my phone, I've got a chance of doing something.
Yeah.
That's really what I'm trying to get at the bottom
of.
I think the real problem there is the fact that, yes, they want to do it, and I don't think that desire ever goes away. If you're a musician, you just want to learn, you want to play. It's the same. But the problem is there's not as many places to learn your craft.
Right.
That was the thing that we all had going for us when we were growing up.
Yeah.
If you wanted a gig 7 nights a week, I know where I grew up on the East Coast, I could have gigged 10 nights a week,
mm-hmm. right?
Because there are that many places.
Right. But you know what I also think is,
and you
I think that every generation likes to find their forbidden fruit.
Yeah.
So it defines the entertainment of a generation where they feel like, yeah, mom and dad hates this, but I love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. AKA the Beatles when they first came out, the Stones, the Zeppelin. There's that side. And then there's also, believe it or not, I think a lot of guys, you know, you watch VH1 and all the things, and they said, what made you get started? And the guys wanted to get the girls.
Yeah, sure.
They realized that nothing. They said, all I know is I'm a geeky guy. I pick up a guitar. All of a sudden, I'm getting laid all the time. And now all of a sudden, it's really popular, and that's a big thing. And also, you get star status.
Hey, you know what? On that note, because that's a lot of hope there for a lot of guys out there. Like, did you want to say something really quick?
I was just going to say, as time goes on, you know, every generation basically, and we've talked about this, Martin, in the past and stuff, every generation basically starts out by kind of molding themselves a little bit after their heroes. You know, you have your influences. I think it's going to be incredibly fascinating to watch what the current new generation looks of as its heroes.
Right.
Well, I mean, is that what it's going to be?
For example,
that's going to be interesting.
Just a second.
Okay.
You made a comment that was very interesting about people that stands out. You know, there's a bunch of people that make music, but none of them, probably majority of them, are not that great. But maybe the situation was exactly the same, just in a different percentage mm-hmm. in the past. Now what's different is that you can post your own video on YouTube and people can see it. So you can see there's more and more bad musicians, but but the good ones, or the one that are good in this generation, they still make a hit. Because
I know what you're saying.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't know exactly where you're saying. But Justin Bieber is a god on earth for many, many fans.
Mm-hmm.
He has I've seen the
and he was found through YouTube.
Exactly. I've seen the beginning of Never Say Never.
That's what I need
okay,
to do.
The kind of faces that I saw of those girls were the same kind of faces that you look in the Beatles' faces.
Yeah.
This hasn't changed.
Yeah.
He is now an idol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break right now on that Justin Bieber note. You know,
it wasn't meant to be harmful. You know?
But it's so true. As you can tell, this is, you know what? It's just going to be a wild ride. We're just going to have to see where it goes. Things are changing, and we're all right in the middle of it. And it'll be really interesting to see where it goes from here. All right. So we'll take a break, and when we come back from the other side, we're going to talk about the vibe.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about Spotify and music and...
And Justin Bieber.
And Justin Bieber.
and
the fact that you can, if you're in a band, you get girls. So there you go.
Yay.
A little bit of, hey, and if you're on a podcast.
There you go. I get the guys.
So, Heather,
that's cool.
Heather, you just automatically, you just bring the whole quality of everybody's voices up. Yeah. Oh, actually, down, because your voice is so good.
Yes. Thank you. I'll pay you afterwards.
Although, like, you know what? You got to say hello in that really Heather voice.
Oh.
Come on. Say, give me a good...
Hello, Michael.
Oh, my God. I have to leave.
God bless you, Martin.
All right. Well, hey, you know what? That's a perfect lead to what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about vibe.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And this was actually... And before we talk about vibe, first of all, I wanted to... I forgot to do this at the beginning of the podcast, but you know, we got some amazing listeners out there, especially with the Facebook, some of the guys that are on Facebook. And I just really wanted to give some kudos to a lot of those guys who posted some really nice things, you know, about Rob's father passing away and stuff like that.
Thank you.
And you guys are really awesome, and you've been nothing but generous and kind. And it was really cool just to see everybody send some good vibes. And I know Rob, you know, appreciated the
hugely.
I will be responding. It's been taking a little while, but yeah, all of the messages have been getting to me, and I really do appreciate it.
Yes. So, and one of the our good listeners, and actually he's become a good friend, Mark. He wrote an email, and in it he gave a great topic suggestion for the show, and I thought that was really good. But before we talk about Mark's suggestion, there's a listener out there, Andrew Bosserman, I think is how you pronounce your last name.
Give it up, Andrew.
He's giving me a ton of great ideas, right? I haven't talked about them yet, but Andrew, I just want to tell you that I will, all right?
He will.
Yeah, I read your emails, and I listen to you, and I am not ignoring you.
Is he making your job too easy? He's just giving you all the
topics
you need? Well, the one topic that because he had a really good thing, single mic recording, single mic, single take, which would be really interesting to talk about, but I want to get Bobby on there. I want to get Andrew on there when we talk about that. Because that was like back in the old days where you put the mic up, you got your performance, and boom, you go. And there's some great recordings out there.
I'll bring Ken Scott for that.
Isn't it funny that if Mozart will be here, he would say back in our days, we would just play live. There was no buttons to play to press.
But I wanted to mention that because that kind of leads into talking about vibe. And that kind of leads into what we're talking about. Because, you know, and Mark in his email, you go, also, could you do a segment sometime about vibe in recordings? I keep getting accused of overmixing, and everyone says that my refs had a great vibe that I lost when I corrected things. Thanks. And then he signed it his name, Mark. And I thought, you know, that's so true. I mean, how many times have you done something kind of offline, you know, not online, and you're writing or you're recording or you're just messing around, and you capture a performance that later on you want to go re-record and you just can't get it, you know? And so I just kind of wanted to open it up to what is that quality? Is that, you know, for instance, Martin, I know working with you, you know, your vocals. I know when we had to reconstruct a couple songs, you needed to find that vocal take. It was like, even though you had all your other ones, it had to be that vocal take. Yeah. What was it about? How do you get your vibe? What is it about that performance that makes that so unique? What is this?
Well, I think over time I've learned, you know, doing this for millions of years and doing these demos, all my records have been my demos, really. Everything that I've built has been right from the beginning of my idea. It actually makes it onto the record. I actually first do phonetic vocals, so I'll just get the melody and I'll just make sounds. And those sounds really do dictate to me the nature of the song. If it's a love song or anything, it just gives you the nature of the feel of what else should happen. And I find myself usually within the first four vocals I do, and I do sometimes do quite a few vocals. I'm not one of those people that is lucky enough to do it first time, although that has happened. I find that I might do six vocals, and I'll always find myself looking at the first three when I'm comping and going, wow. That was the day I wrote it. That was the day it first came out. It's got a feel to the rhythm. It's got a vibe, as you say.
Right.
And I'm very fortunate because I'm at home. My studio's at home, and my demos are my records. There's a lot I could tell you about this because it's really specific to me over the years. It has been about the spirit of the performance, the feel of the vibe of the lyric coming near the microphone and living the song. And you know, that's become absolutely crucial and the nugget to everything I do is the vibe. It has to be, because it's going to be played millions of times by me as I build it and play it to people. And it has to have now, more than when I first started. When you first started, you were just happy to finish a song, even if it was crap. It's true, though. Just wanted to get through it and go, look, I've written a song. But as the years come on now, it's all down now to vibe. And I don't want to, I could hold the mic for the whole show for this because I have a microphone set up with all the guitars around it and the keyboards. And I record straight away as I'm writing. And then I have a cassette going as well. so that I can record anywhere in the house. And if that's good on the cassette, I'll put it across. And as Mike dealt on the song on my album that had been lost in a hard drive, we, luckily with your help, I found the crucial vocal to this song on this album, and it could not be beaten, and I knew it couldn't be beaten because it was about something specific that happened to me, you know, that meant a lot to me. And so when I sang it, that thing had just happened, and so my emotion was on tape, and I knew it, but it took a lot of experience for that. Going on past that, my success with other bands, These Dreams, was a guide vocal by Nancy Wilson. And it was such a good guide vocal. We know that Kim Carnes, when she did, you know, Betty Davis Eyes, that was a rough mix. It is very skillful to step back and to look at the nature of things. You sometimes need somebody around you to go, oh, that sounds good. And you go, oh, no, that's just a rough vocal. And they go, yeah, that's great. And then you go and do it again. And you go, well, it's all in time. It's all perfect. It's lovely. It's really a record. And you go, excuse my friend. Off, you know, the vibe of it before, you know, what, and that's the word again. But I don't think I had that for about 10 years, you know, because you just want to get perfection. You need people watching you how you sing. All of a sudden, you go, you know, I don't mind being out of tune there. Please don't put auto tune on, you know, please don't, because it's nice that, there's some blood in it, yeah, you know.
It's real.
It's real.
It's raw.
It's easy for me to talk about now, but I hope that the people that are listening know that takes a bit of time, and I was very lucky, and I was obsessed with recording myself all the time and singing, but it did come down to even guitar parts, you know.
It's maturity, though.
I think it is. My new album, I've played all the instruments on it, and I was given a lot of courage to do that over a long period of time. I wanted to emulate, you know, McCartney's first solo record and what Todd Rundgren had done and Prince. They just did everything themselves. I thought, well, this is the time to do that and have a go and feel every aspect of the recording. And it's very interesting jumping back to the album before that. I'd had great guitarists like Neil Taylor and... Oh, yeah. Robbie Robertson, and they'd be doing these guitar parts, and then I'd play them the roughs. I was saying, this is just the rough that I want you to sort of play around, and they're going, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they go, well, I love the sound, and I go, well, it's just a live.
So there's a
one microphone, and it's not really, yeah, but it's a vibe.
There's an intimacy to it. There's kind of a.
And what you play is what we wouldn't play. Because you don't really know what you're doing.
It's
pretty magical.
And also listen to what you say. It's the moment when you are yourself that the vibe comes out.
Yes.
Exactly.
And I can see this happening also with... you mentioned maturity. But I was watching a couple of videos on YouTube of young kids just playing guitar, singing. They were probably 18, 17, whatever. Well, they put life in it, and it was really good.
But it's the maturity to say, oh, okay, I'll keep that one rather than keep
right.
That.
That's the hard part.
What Bob just said there, really, like Ken Scott, and these are the men you need in the room, and what we needed with George Martin, with the Beatles going, oh, John, don't touch that vocal.
Yeah.
Believe me, it's good. That's the maturity, and then the musicians take that away as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was just mentioning that.
No, it's true.
That these kids, the moment they put themselves in it, something magic happens, even if they don't have that experience.
But even looking at in our era, of, you know, looking at all the Woodstock stuff, of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Zeppelin, and Who, and all of a sudden... They're all out of tune. The guitars are out of tune. They're like not in some of the vocals. Sometimes they are. But there's something raw about it. You look at the punk era, and all of a sudden there was something raw. There was something we talk about vibe and this attitude. And I think that even you look at Lady Gaga, while her music is very, very processed, but her show is very raw.
Yeah,
there's a certain amount of it. I think everybody likes something that's just got a little something to it.
Well,
I think when you know Zeppelin talked about it, they said that we were quite ragged, and that raggedness and not knowing exactly what was going to happen on the night, it actually goes to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not many people that have that, bands that have that, but they sort of go on stage and you know they're going to be doing something that night. That might not always happen, and
this is the key.
Right.
They're
this
balancing.
Is the key. It gives the
It's the live. Feeling that it's they're real. It's
human. Witnessing real, something exactly. great that maybe won't happen again.
Well, there's exactly. a mistake.
And this is still relevant today, though.
Mm-hmm. How does it work with Stevie?
You told me about stories about... I mean,
well, which aspect?
Well, you always said that people loved it when something screwed up and they got a chance.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was his best shows.
People like seeing, you know, as much as the industry would make you think that everybody wants everything auto-tuned
humanity,
perfect,
yeah.
people really yeah. do respond to humanity. If I was going to say this, if I was going to do an anti-auto-tune ad, you could basically just say, Sinatra was often flat, Stevie Wonder's often sharp. Don't use auto-tune.
It's human.
Because it's true. They like the humanity. Basically, also, talking about The Who and older groups from back then, I came up with a theory when I was a little kid that, because I used to wonder how these singers with like crazy yeah. voices and being way out of tune and stuff would be so successful. And it occurred to me that usually if the vocal was going to be crazy, the music was pretty much tight and really together. Wow. And if the music was going to be wild, usually it wasn't competing against a vocal that was also wild for it to be like a commercial hit. It's like there has to be some basis that you can judge the wildness against.
Yeah.
And time after time, that's been proven to me where you hear like a very polished band. I mean, think about bands like The Cure.
Right.
You know, well, the
Green
band
Day.
Was... or well, Green Day's not even that wild, really. But yeah. The Cure, you know, he had those crazy sure. lead vocals on top of a track, though, that was really solid and good. I don't think you could have had a voice that crazy on top of a track that crazy.
Tension to release.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a yin and yang thing. But getting to the humanity thing, there are a zillion stories, and anybody who's been to a Stevie Wonder concert where something's gone wrong...
Wait, that's every...
Well, every... Because, you know, the shows didn't really... No, the audience wouldn't most of the time know because the show would not have a set list. And we had some crazy things happen. I don't know if this was on a tour that you were on, but we did a tour in the 90s where there was a whole orchestra on the tour with us. And Stevie's very spontaneous on stage. And, I mean, we would have no set list. We would do some songs where if there was a sequencer going for some of the tracks that couldn't be replicated live... He'd be calling out, you know, extra chorus or take it to the bridge.
Right. Speed it up.
I love it.
Well, and I would actually sit there, and I had charts of what bar and beat each section of every song was, and I would be editing in real time. Oh. We were using Texture was the sequencer back then, and Roger Powell had done a lot of customization so I could do this. But he'd say, take it to the bridge, and I would stop two beats ahead, type in the bar number that we needed to go to. And you know what? It was really fun, and it was like playing a sequencer as a live.
Well, you
instrument.
Were a musician.
Yeah, exactly.
And you had to be a musician.
And a fast typer.
And a fast typer.
Yes.
And that wasn't as much a technician gig as it was a musical gig, and I was playing keyboards too. But to me, that was fun and spontaneous, and you never felt like you were dealing with canned music because it was totally fluid.
Right.
But there would be some things. My favorite one that ever happened, I'll never forget this. We were doing Living for the City, and... there was a big orchestra behind us and the whole band and everything else. And we're in this massive stadium. It's this huge show. It's going great. And Stevie can sense the vibe from the crowd that they're really into the song. So he decides to go around again to another chorus and then like back to an instrumental and back to another chorus.
Sure.
So he calls us out and the band follows him, but an orchestra can't do that. Yeah. So...
yeah.
He yells out something like, take it to the bridge or whatever. And I could see, I'll never forget, Henry Panyon was the conductor of the orchestra. I remember the look of horror on his face because he realized the train wreck that was about to happen.
Oh, my God.
And because, you know, he's up there, he's conducting. And so the band, oh, I know what it was. They went to that da-da-da-da-da-da-da section
right.
another time. But the orchestra didn't.
Yeah.
And it was this hilarious train wreck. And I remember the look of horror on Henry's face as he knew what was going to happen. And then as soon as it happened, I saw the look on Stevie's face. Because at that moment he realized, oh, wait a minute. The moment was unsalvageable, and Stevie started waving his hands, and he just stopped the whole thing, and he was laughing. And he said something like, oh, I forgot we had an orchestra or something.
Awesome.
And then he picked it up again, and you know what? It was so cool, because then when it came in, it was a jam. Everybody was having fun, including the players in the orchestra who knew what was going on then.
Oh,
and so then Henry didn't even have to conduct anymore. It just became a party. And I guarantee you, every single person who left that night, that was their favorite moment of the show.
Jam session. Because
it was just, it was a screw-up, it was human, but it was so incredibly cool.
It was real. You got to be part of that.
And you know what? Yes. I tell new artists, you know, if something goes wrong, because I've worked with a lot of young singers who are really nervous, what if I forget a lyric?
you know, Stevie would forget lyrics, and he'd make some up about how he forgot the lyrics.
That's what we do on stage.
You have to. The truth is, as a new artist, the audience wants to see you have fun. They don't really care that you got it right. If you get out there and have twice as much fun as they thought you were going to have if you did the song right, then that's all they leave with, and that's what makes them want to see you again. And, you know, there are people who've seen Stevie dozens of times in their life, and they've never had the same show twice, and they talk about those human moments.
The joke around the crew was the set list was barely a suggestion. Because you knew that. Okay, here's kind of what we're going to do tonight.
Boy, it made the band, you know, on top of their game. Yeah.
Well, and his band, Scott used to come to soundchecks sometimes. Soundcheck was often about just everybody hanging out, making sure everybody's still tight, you know, friends, and that, you know, everybody knows what's going on in everybody else's life. It was assumed when you got that gig, you knew every single song he had ever released, and you were ready to play them, you know, on the drop of a hat. And the trick with Stevie is the starting point was you had to know every part of every song, because then he would write songs on stage.
Wow.
And he'd call out to Nate, the bass player, here, I want you to play something like this. And he'd call out to the guitar players, the percussionists. Good. Next thing you know, he's doing a writing session in front of 50,000 people.
Wow.
He wrote a song. We did a show in Chicago at whatever is the main park in Chicago. It holds like 250,000 people. And he's like trying out background vocal parts and, oh, try this guitar, try this a little different. And you know what? The audience loved every second of it. I will just say one trick. One thing we always had to remember at the end of those concerts was to get someone to copyright it. Because the problem with writing a song in front of 250,000 people is if someone else gets there first, you're in trouble.
I would say that it kind of goes back in some ways to jazz. I mean, classical was very, here's the music, here's what you write, here's where it starts, here's where it ends. Jazz would say, okay, here's a little melody, and let's start comping around the melody, and let's start
Here's the head, and then...
Yeah, Coltrane or whatever. Right. You look at all the greats, and they would just start playing around.
Absolutely. And
the bands would always have this vibe that they'll watch each other and know where each other was taking it. And that was the great thing about jazz, was that every performance was different, guaranteed.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, really quick, Hez, did you want to say something?
Yes, he did.
Well, I just wanted to... just speak once in this whole
so they know you actually showed up.
So
something that you said, and then you kind of picked up on it, probably 2.5-3 years ago, and I know that both of you guys, Mike and Rob, heard some of the stuff that I had done. The laptop that I did it on, I lost it, and I'd lost all of my music. It got thrown down a cement staircase. So I thought it would be gone forever, and I didn't even have any kind of a recording, like, from my website or anything like that. So 2 weeks ago, I found it.
Oh, my gosh.
And I found the tracks. I found all the MIDI. I found everything.
Where?
I had backed it up somehow, some way. And it was the only 3 songs that I had backed up from probably 60, 70 songs that I did.
Wow.
So... and, you know, it was okay because I kind of tried to go back and redo them anyway, but...
Oh, it's never the same, though.
It's never the same, and this is what's so great about this and what you were saying. The plugins that I used are no longer available to me, if you know what I mean. And so I loaded it up, like, okay, get the notepad out, you know, what, got to go figure out which, you know, where to find these plugins. And all of a sudden, and of course I found the masters as well. So I was playing the masters, and I was like, okay. And then I would play a section of what I was doing, and my wife, who was in the living room, said, "Dude, that sounds way better."
I love her.
And so she kept saying that over and over again, and I'm like, "Wait, which one? This one? That one? This one?" And it turned out that the plugins that had been missing were the ones that I didn't need. And that the raw tracks that I literally recorded it with a $10 microphone.
That's awesome.
I had a crappy little, like, cardboard amp, and I was playing guitar into it, and I was, you know, recording synths through a $30 preamp.
That's so cool.
And I didn't have anything, and I just had the microphone on my MacBook at the time, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
But you have your passion.
And then I went and I decided, oh, I'm going to get in there and, you know, bring on the Waves plugins. Woo! You know? And they're awesome, but I used every one of them, I think, that you could possibly use. And I overdid it. And so, you know, that maturity wasn't there, but the lesson was learned, and it was like, I'm never doing that again.
Well, you know what? A big part of the whole demo process, you know, we always talk about doing the demo version of a song versus the real version of a song. That basically is from the old days when, you know, you just couldn't do the real version of a song because most people couldn't get a band in their living room and record it and have it sound really great. So there was the concept of, we're going to do the demo, and then we're going to get it to someone who's going to give us the money to do it for real. Right. Those days, ever since the four-track Porta studio, those days have really not had to be around. I mean, those days have been gone for a long time because as long as you can record a great idea, the sound quality, I mean, look at MP3 files, people just don't care. Right. If the song hits them on an emotional level, they just don't care. Nowadays, though, your very first demo, I mean, even if you do it in GarageBand, which you got for free with your Mac, the quality is better than what we were aspiring to. You know, frequency response.
This is a great point because you're talking about quality. Yeah. You know, and it's not really about quality.
Quality is the wrong word.
You know, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like you've got all that, and it's still something else we're looking for. Really, you know, it helps, but really, what we might like is Instant Karma by John Lennon, done in a day and pressed the same day and pushed out.
If I could throw one thing in, and from a film standpoint, I did a movie a while back called American Beauty. And what was interesting with this was the whole opening of the movie, we basically grabbed Kevin Spacey on the set and said, here, just read this in his trailer. So it had that real boxy trailer sound. And we said, okay, well, you know, and they used it for the beginning of the movie. And then we said, okay, well, now when ADR it, come in, let's do it for real. And we played it, and we did take after take after take after take. And we said, you know, we're not getting it. For whatever reason, we're not this weird, because if you look at the whole movie, the way the actors are putting the lines out is a very unnatural way of talking.
Right.
So we ended up just doing a little EQ, not much, and it's pretty much Kevin Spacey in his trailer saying these lines wild the whole opening of the movie.
Right.
And the other instance we had, and I learned, you know, because I think people, when you interact with people, they teach you things. Uh-huh. We had a scene where the two girls are smoking at the school, the two teenage girls, and they had a soccer game going on, but we didn't know what it was. It sounded like war. Big noise, and we're like, oh my God, this is terrible, because you don't see it.
Right.
But there's all this, we're like, what is that? They said, oh, there's a soccer game going on, you know, a couple soccer games on the other side of the building. It's a big open field. We were shooting. Okay. So we're sitting there, so we ADR'd it, did it all, cleaned it all up, put the Bee Gees in, put the Foley in, and the director goes, I hate it. And he goes, and we're like, what do you mean?
Why?
And he goes, you know, we have to go back with the dialogue. We're like, but it's so bad. And he goes, I don't care. It's got a vibe to it.
Right.
It's got an attitude that we're not recapturing, and they just did it that time.
Right.
And I sat there and went, because he goes, nobody cares. They care about the attitude. They care about the performance. They don't care whether it's clean or not.
You know, it's one of the reasons, you know, in the past we've talked about getting good gear for your studio and what's the most important thing, a good microphone, a good preamp, whatever, good A to D converters. The truth is, one of the reasons we keep saying you don't want to skimp on those most important pieces is because you should think that anything that spontaneously comes out of your mouth might be the record.
Yeah.
So never undervalue your own stuff.
There's also been these times, we're talking about vibe very positively, but there's also been those times where we've been in the studio and there's no vibe at all. And however hard you try, you squeeze so hard and you know that it's just not there. And that's a very magical thing.
You know what? That's so true. And I'll tell you a great example where I see that all the time.
A bit like today, you know?
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed the audio cast. No, actually, and Heather can relate to this, is when I do VO, especially for commercials and things like that, there'll be times where, like, we'll get a demo from, like, right? How many times have you done a demo and they end up using that in the commercial or something like that? Because that happens
a lot.
Yeah. And I'll get a demo, and we'll cut into the spot. We'll bring in the same voiceover actress or actor to come do it, and they will go take one, take two, take blah, blah, all the way to take 35, and they end up going with the demo.
Right.
Because I think what you know, we got to wrap this up. But I think one thing that we have to realize is that, you know, vibe, it's I think if you're going to define what vibe is it's a certain amount of honesty. It's just this
absolute honest
performance, you know? And I think when you lack vibe, what you're talking about, it's usually when you're trying to force it, you know?
You can't.
Or copy something.
Right.
And I think vibe is getting an emotional reaction to something.
There's something.
And if you don't, then you lost your vibe.
There's something that is connected to the technology side of how you record something. For example, this is something that I've experienced many times. I'm recording something, so I'm setting up all the mics, and then I'm moving them around because I'm having another idea, and then suddenly I had the real idea, and I start recording, but unfortunately the microphone was too far, or I wasn't recording with the right thing. So when I listen to it, okay, I'm going to play this again. So I go there, I play this again, I place everything right, I mean, supposedly right,
right. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm telling you this because I receive emails from people that keep saying, oh, which microphone should I use, mm-hmm. which everything.
Right.
You shouldn't really struggle too much on this thing. Should do something. I mean, try what you have, and it might be great already.
Right. I think what Rob said there, you know, it's great to learn about the stuff and say, oh, I've got a Neumann, I've got this or whatever, this would mm-hmm. be great, you know. But at the same time, to say that the key of this is what we do anyway, mm-hmm. and this will just add to the picture.
Yeah, and the vibe that happens when you are doing something not in a totally planned environment. Mm. Because if you plan too much, you won't get any vibe because you will get tired by the time everything is set up properly.
I was going to say something similar to that. The idea with vibe, you know, we've talked about getting that initial demo or getting that first pass and having it be the magical one. And I've seen it happen a zillion times in the studio with lots of artists where that first demo turns out to be the take. I mean, they might try 10,000 others to find out that was the one. But and I can understand what Martin went through after losing a file where you knew it was the right one. That's just got to drive you crazy.
This is quite an interesting thing, though, that might be useful. Is that, we did find it again, the vocal I wanted, mm-hmm. but it was already in a mix. It was mixed down. I couldn't get into it. I couldn't get into it to do the final work.
That's even worse.
But you had to stay with it. And it was worthwhile. And you moved around it because you knew the vocal. You just have to say, hey, the drums have to be this. This guitar is not on this take.
Oh, but that's
this
okay
is the only take I have, but I have the voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what
foundation.
Everybody's keying into.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is when you have a singer, let's say you have that first take and then you're going to start. Let's say you're a producer working with a singer. They've done the one take. No one says, oh, we can just do the one and move on. So you start doing other takes. After a while with a singer, if you keep trying to sing a song the same way, it starts to get stale. In other words, if you did it a certain way and you keep trying to just do slight little variations, the singer's going to get tired, the producer's going to get tired, and you're not going to get anywhere because everything just sounds like sort of a faint imitation of what came before it. As a singer and a producer, it's really important to realize that you should try something different. Try a different vibe or try a different approach.
Absolutely.
Try different riffs. Try different ad-libs. Try to really be outside the box for a second. Either that's going to give you something you like more, or when you come back to your first approach, you're going to do it with a new freshness.
I think everybody knows here, isn't it, that there's that moment when everything in the air is too tight.
It's easy to get there.
Singer starts to look at the words real seriously, wonders how wow he sounds, and the air gets thick.
We
all know that, and you almost got to pull away.
You get too serious about it.
You think about it too much.
It's funny because it's all about emotion. Like, for example, the first kiss. Okay, you can't plan it. You can't really rehearse it because it won't happen anyway. That's the emotion of it, and it's the same in music. The first take or the first time you were able to play that riff, all those 8 or 16 bars that you wanted to play mm-hmm. in full, and you mm-hmm. make it. There's mm-hmm. something magic in it.
First kiss, Truth or Dare, in 7th grade, and it was planned, and I just want to
in your mind it was planned, but the real moment when it happened in reality for the first time, that was different.
But it shouldn't have happened, though.
There's one more thing. You said something there about planning, and back to what I went through after finding my old tracks. I decided not to find any of those plugins, and I just started all over again and ended up going through a subtractive process.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, from what I've heard from some of you guys and everywhere, is that it's supposed to be a subtractive process, you know, and that's what adds to it. And a lot of people think that means that you start pulling stuff out from a sonic content. It's like, well, yeah, but not necessarily. What it means is you know, if the vibe's already there, the last thing you want to do is put a bunch of sugar on it.
Exactly.
And if the vibe isn't there, that doesn't mean you put more sugar on it. You know, you have to go and find it. And so what I've been doing is I've been selling all my gear. I'm serious. I keep the core material there, and I stand there with nothing.
But it's true. I mean, if the vibe is in the vocal or in the piano, it can't really add 50 takes of guitar. Right.
But, you know, but I'll say one thing with that, though. I think it's important because if you look at a musician or an engineer.
Right.
And I think that there's two sides of it. Learning your craft.
Right.
So then it allows you to be spontaneous.
Yes,
that's right. So the better musician you are, the better the singer, the better engineer, the better you know your plugins. Yeah. So you technologically go, oh, okay, I know this plugin. Like right now, one of the things I'm doing is shedding a lot of plugins.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm learning them. So now when I finally get to the point where someone goes, okay, you're on, I'm not going to go, let me think
Let's
about
try this.
Now all of a sudden my hands, my brain starts moving and the creative process flows.
Yep. You know, we're going to have to wrap this up because we're going way long. But two points I got to make. Number one, and it's, you know, following up what you said, Scott, and actually what you said too, Rob, is learn your craft so that your temp mix is a good mix. Because I'm going to tell you this, Martin, on that particular song that we were talking about, even though it was a demo mix, it was a pretty damn good mix. I mean, Martin is a great. He's really you're an amazing mixer. And so even his demos, he there's a tenacity and an intensity that I see when he's working on it, as if that's the one. So if you work that way, when you have an accident and you have to go back, or you liked your first one is good enough. Yeah. So I think following what Rob said, if you have the gear, and what Scott said, if you develop the talent so that, you know, take yourself seriously, take your work seriously.
But don't think too much.
It's going to be, you know, when you learn it and it's just, you know, second nature, you're not going to, it's going to be part of you. You're not even have to think about it. You won't overthink the room and it'll be really good.
Let me just say this. It's so hilarious to me, and I understand that we do need to say these things, but it's hilarious that we have to say, by the way, you should learn how to work your instrument, and you should learn how to write a song, and you should learn how to record, because it's so easy nowadays that everybody's doing it whether they know how or not.
You know what?
You have to have the foundation.
Of course you do.
I went to Berklee College of Music, not the thing, and as a guitar player. So at Berklee, guitar players got a reputation. Because we learn how to play lots of notes really quickly and just lots of notes.
Right.
So what they told us upon graduation, they kind of said, okay, everybody's graduating. They said, okay, we've now taught you a whole bunch of stuff. Now you need to learn how to forget it.
Yeah, that happens.
And now you need to learn just to do it. Don't think about it. Don't figure out. Don't overanalyze it. Just play.
I've had to tell so many Berklee guitar players, that was great. Now play half those notes.
Well, hey, listen, we're wrapping up. Really quick, the last thing I want to point out when we're talking about vibe, we all talked about what vibe is and vibe. There's a couple things I call it really, and I just made this up, and you can add to it, but the three P's to kill a vibe. And the first one is pressure. If you feel pressured, if you feel like you have to do it in a certain amount of time and has to get, that'll kill a vibe. I've seen it happen in sessions.
For sure, yeah.
If you're working up against the clock.
It worked for David Bowie and Queen, though.
The second one is...
Also pressure to meet the expectation of someone else.
The second one, which leads into my second one. My second P is perfection. If you're trying to perfect every note, if you're trying to perfect every phrase, every little mix move, that can kill the vibe too, because what made that piece golden could have been the imperfections, and that's actually what you're looking for. And finally, the last one is kind of what Hez was talking about, is process. If you over process things, if you over mix things, if you add reverb when you didn't have reverb before, if you want to try out your, you know, Waves Platinum and use every single plugin, and I mean, I'll tell you what, guys, compression can be just an evil, evil, evil thing.
I was going to say exactly the same. Yes. If you're obsessed with the -60 dB at any cost, you will kill the song, for sure.
Compression, you know, just you use that compression and reverb, just use sparingly, you know. There's nothing wrong with just a good, honest sound, you know.
Amen.
And speaking of processing, Giant, when I was listening, I was on YouTube, and if you search in YouTube, Giant Love Will Come Home, this is a vocal that was done. Dan Huff sang it, and it was done before autotune. And there's this honesty and this passion and this longing in this in the vocal.
He owns it.
That autotune sucks a lot of that away, you know? It's how you ramp into a note and how you come out of a note and how when you're holding something out, there's a little quiver in your voice. Yep. And there's mm-hmm. a little bit of it, almost like a cracking, like you just know that there's this passion and this intensity. That, guys, is vibe. And
absolutely.
That's something that you know, you can't, you know, you don't want to kill. You leave it in there, keep it.
You can't force it.
Cherish it, you know. It's all precious.
And I think everybody has to find, every creative soul has to be able to find their process, whether it's sitting in a dark room lighting candles, whether it's eating a breakfast, whether it's working at night after dinner. Everybody's got a thing.
Right.
That they've got, because I know that I, because I do both business and creative, I have to kind of put myself in a special zone to be able to create, otherwise it just
you have to sacrifice three cows.
Which is actually the hardest thing. It's to become yourself.
Three grapes exactly 2 inches apart with a blue M&M.
All right. Well, hey, listen.
But we're not done, Mike.
Oh no,
we're just getting started.
Oh, no. We're just warmed up.
Hi, welcome to the Nowcast.
That's right. I feel a good vibe.
Hey, listen.
Hey, so Mike, what are you doing these days?
Hey, this is an awesome podcast, guys, and I want to thank everybody for being back on. You know, it's great. Kez, it was good to see you.
Yeah,
Heather,
right,
it was good to have you back.
Thank you for
Martin.
Having me.
It was good.
It was a real joy. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and before we go, Rob, you working on anything you can talk about quickly?
Some really cool video game stuff that I think I mentioned we were starting on last time, and we're finishing it now, but I still can't say what it is, but I should be able to by the next one. But it's pretty cool musical video game.
Cool.
And actually, we've got some commercial music. I've been away helping the family and, you know, working on just family stuff. But, you know, all of a sudden we've got some movie trailers and some TV commercials, which just straight composition jobs. Right. So I get to put my composer hat on, which is always fun.
Great. Nice. And before I ask Bobby what he's doing, guys, I want to recommend that you pick up Bobby's Music 3.0 book. It's a great book. I actually was in a bookstore. I was flipping through it, and it's really... Actually, any of your books are really awesome. I mean, I feel honored that you're on the podcast, but I have to plug that because I started, and I was like, man, this guy kind of knows his stuff. So I just want to encourage
thank you
people
kindly.
No, to go out there and...
we'll dumb him down eventually. He's still putting it together.
But Bobby, are you working on anything
I've been really busy, actually. I've been producing this 3D pilot. It's for a music show. And all I can say is the first one that we did had Terry Bozzio on it.
I love, oh my gosh.
Which was just unbelievable.
Dale Bozzio is like my favorite drummer.
Terry Bozzio, not Dale.
I know, but that's right. Dale's his wife.
Yeah, used to be, yeah. Right. But Terry takes drumming to a new level. He's not a drummer. He's something else. So anyway, it's a 3D pilot, and hopefully, you know, it'll be picked up at some point.
Great.
I just mixed a Memphis Soul record, which was absolutely awesome to hear that kind of music again. And I've been playing sessions lately again, which hasn't happened in a long time. That's been a lot of fun.
Wow.
And I have an iPhone app about to come out as well.
Wow. No way.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to, next time, we'll have to talk about that.
So there's a lot going on. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, and by the way, all the stuff that we talked about in the first segment, you can read about it every day in my Music 3.0 blog as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Every day.
Awesome.
And he writes a lot of cool stuff. It's one of my must reads too.
Where would we go to?
Yes,
Music 3.0. Music. The number 3.0 .blogspot.com.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
So, and if you know what, all you gotta do, if you Google his name, you'll see all the stuff will come up because it's all linkable. Hez, you're working with a Well, not music?
Well, yeah, I'm writing plugins.
Yeah.
But it's not official with anybody. It's on my own dime at the moment.
Nice. It will be soon, though.
Right. So there's that. And also, I am really selling all my gear, so it'll be on eBay. Please go. And then I'm looking for work.
And he's very talented.
And Heather.
Yes,
it's
Michael.
So good to have you back on.
I know, I'm so
voiced,
thank you.
We've worked a couple times together. You've done some stuff for Nickelodeon. And
yes.
Are you working on anything right now that you can talk about?
You know what? I'm just still swinging the bat. I actually had work today, so it was really... This week has been really a good week, so
great.
I just feel very thankful that a job or... And, actually being able to work, and then there's been a couple times this year where it's been like a couple weeks where I haven't, and it's interesting though how getting back into the studio, it's like you know if you don't work those right. muscles, like today it was kind of like I went back in and I was like, oh my gosh, because I do a lot of my recording at home in my closet still, so that was wonderful. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Well, you and I possibly will be working together.
On some stuff, yes.
On some stuff.
Which you can't talk about.
Which we can't talk about. The non-disclosure. Oh, yeah.
But
so,
we can. But really quick, before we go, you got to give us another Heather special on the microphone.
Scotty.
Oh, my God.
I love you.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
I tell you what, it's only we have to say thank you for at least one good-looking person. No. Thank you for the Heather. Thank you for the pretty face, because the rest of us are just an ugly bunch of bloody prehistoric fucking monsters.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Don't you put down freaking film
this time. This is why I came tonight. That's awesome.
And you know what? And she'll be back more often, right?
Yes. I hope so. If you guys are going
to... And I've still been called worse, Martin, by the way. I like to keep trying.
Diego,
yes.
I know you pretty much can't talk about it.
No, I can't really talk about it.
Nobody can talk about
no.
it.
No. The thing is, I can tell you, I'm building instruments, but I can't really tell you why.
Okay.
But...
You will be able to.
Look at my hands.
Yes.
I'm 100% into construction mode in these days. It's really cool.
Well, you know, that's enough, because, you know, if you're building something, it's getting down on tape, and we know we're going to be able to see it, you know, when the time's right. So I will say that if you want to see a really cool little thing.
Oh, you know what
Diego,
I did recently? I bought a harp.
Oh,
yeah. No, but just because I was curious. I never played the harp.
I
got a harp. Because I've been, you know, going at the NAMM show and passing in front of the booth every time, saying, oh, these are very nice harps. And finally, I got one and recorded a piece of music, put it on SoundCloud. It's called Lila,
right.
Because Lila is the name of the harp. You know, there's a whole story behind. But anyway, I just like the fact that I didn't know how to play it. I was actually playing backwards. You know, yeah, but it felt more natural to me that way.
Hey, whatever works.
Exactly. And so that's...
whatever gets the vibe.
Exactly.
Well, let me finish. And what I was saying was check out the API audio, because you have your nice little piece for your DTS. The DTS stuff is still up there. So I just want to encourage people, if they want to see, you know, how Diego works and some of his stuff,
yeah,
you can go to
cool.
APIaudio.com and see the little video that I put together.
Is this new? Is it a new one?
No, it's been up there for a little bit, but
yeah.
I just wanted to...
No, but
it's
really that, you know, API made the sound of this project. I was getting the sounds out of the milk. We're like, whoo, a thunderstorm.
So, Scott.
I love it.
Hello.
Hello.
What have you worked on? What are you working on that you can talk about?
Oh, I can't really talk about it.
No, you know, I've taken the last month to actually take care of some family.
I see.
And but the thing I've been working on the industry side is I've got a little break before I start up again, and we've been spending a lot of time with Pro Tools HD compared to Pro Tools native, and really doing lots of tests to truly understand what the differences are. And I put 48 5.1 altiverbs in native with 192 tracks, and it played.
Oh, really?
That is beautiful.
So
it means it's beautiful.
I took a mix that I did in an HD3, added 12 more stereo altiverbs, 12 L316s, an ear cam plugin, and it only hit 60%.
Yeah. Wow. I use native to mix
so
the DTS.
We're doing, so we're really trying to understand that. We're understanding, you know, can we hear the floating point or not? And we're trying to listen to the summing. So, and I've been looking at everything from Spectrumworks to all these great odd plugins. So I'm kind of playing right now, and we were talking about technology and teching. I'm kind of getting another vocabulary because I've got about three movies coming up that I want to kind of change and evolve my sound a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm back into the shedding new ideas, new thoughts, new recordings. Just
shedding is a musician's term meaning practicing, by the way. I have no idea what the heck he's talking about.
Yeah, practicing and experimenting and to say, yeah, I've done this and I kind of get tired of the way I've done this, this, and this. And I want to come up with something new and unique and different.
Right.
And so rarely in my career have I had time to do that.
Right.
That when you do get that time, it's actually quite valuable to take advantage of it.
That's cool.
That's what I'm doing.
Hey, speaking of AltaVerb, I just got the Audio Ease, the complete bundle. And let me tell you, speakerphone is, by golly, the most
speakerphone number two is amazing.
I was going to say, you can actually run all those plugins you were talking about or one copy of speakerphone. That it is a system hug, but it's incredible.
But speakerphone, I've done four commercials with it, and it made me, like, literally the client behind me thought I was like an audio god.
Well, you are.
And I'll say one thing about speakerphone. The presets are really cool. Yeah. Forget the presets.
Right.
Go into the modules.
Right.
And you will go, it will take you places that will blow your mind.
That's exactly. Don't follow what they say. Just different little plugins and little modules and start out with the little duck toy that they have, little plastic speaker, little frog speaker. And you can go in there. I mean, there's so many cool things. It's really a good thing, but I had to give them a plug because they really made me
a lot better. Oh, awesome stuff.
Are they gonna give us
like their stuff.
Pagey boy,
yes,
it's good to see you.
It's really, really great to be back. I really learned a lot tonight. It was really great.
Me too.
And
really
I know great. There's some good, exciting things coming down your way.
Yeah, I've finished the next solo record, and it's coming out at Christmas. So it's just coming up to August, and so I'm really, you know, this is the time I have to, because it's my own label. We start preparing now to put it out, and I couldn't be more excited about it. It's you know, the best stuff I've ever done.
Good for you.
And it's nice that it's finished. And it's ready to go. And now it's from August up to Christmas, you know, all the things you do just to get it out and to do the photos and all that stuff and what you need to do. But that's really where, what I, you know, that's ready to go. And I'm very excited that it's coming out at Christmas. It's kind
Can
of
you tell us the title?
Yeah, it's called A Temper of Peace.
Huh.
That got the crowd going.
It's the vibe. It was very real.
Yeah, and a lot of the songs, you know, it was, as I said, it was my joy to record all the instruments myself. As a kid, I grew up and I marvelled at the Beatles, and when Paul McCartney broke away and did his own record, I'm just plugging in the back of the tape machine. This was something I've always wanted to do, to play everything. It took a long time again, you know, 2 years. But and Mike helped me retrieve a huge. At one point, the record exploded from all the work, and Mike helped me go searching into the hard drives to pull out specifically one special song that was A Nightmare to Lose, which was the key song to the record. And around the edges of that, and I'm very excited because it's sort of, I can't wait to put it out. I've been, you know, preparing some songs for Robbie Williams, because I started some stuff with him, and he's been away on tour, and I've been having a lot of fun in the studio. I think for the first time ever in my life, I'm really having fun and not taking it serious. It was like I'm just in a very prolific mood. So just what we were talking about tonight, it was like I just put up the amplifier and I just played and recorded
and you were.
It. And here I am at this stage of my career. I'm sure you'll all understand it, but I'll only really do it unless it's fun. And if it does turn into something that's a little more serious, well, then the song will tell me to work a bit serious. But at the moment, it's let's experiment. But I'm just really excited about putting the next record out.
And I, you know, I got to give you a plug because I've heard the music, and it's phenomenal. It's definitely your best stuff. And
Thank you.
A lot of vibe, a lot of good, a lot, you know, honesty.
And
I know some of the stuff that you were writing through, and it really comes across. It's beautiful.
Thank you, Mike.
It's going to be.
I can't wait.
Thank you.
And Mike, what are you up to?
Yeah, what's going on? Oh, come on.
Okay, I'll tell you what. First of all, a couple things that well, I mixed a couple commercials. I did Toshiba stuff and some more Newegg stuff. And one that's really fun right now is there's a campaign called Consequences where Toshiba, it has to do with zombies. If you go online and look it up, it was really fun to do all the sound design and stuff because basically it's a campaign where, you know, what would happen if Toshiba didn't, you know, include a certain feature. And the really fun one was, you know, basically all the milk would spoil and people would turn into zombies and the world would become overrun. So it was really fun. Anyhow, so that's one of the things that I was up to. But I have to mention a few things right off the bat. A good friend of the podcast, he's been on, I think, three times, Mike Stitz, who's a musician. He's also a mixer. His latest project, which is an independent one that he mixed, was for a band called Arms of the Sun. Mm. That's independent. That got released. And I need to give these guys a plug because it's an amazing album. It's the mixes are really, really tight, really good. And the story behind the album is it got recorded and, you know, Mike would never say this, but I'm going to because I've heard it. Some of the tracks were a little raw. Some were a little difficult. So consequently, some of the early mixes that these guys had to deal with weren't the best. Mike used a API 2500 and a 7600 module, two pieces. And actually, I did a video on the API website and re-recorded almost every single one of the tracks through one of them, did some processing, and just pulled an amazing mix.
I heard that. It was
an amazing mix out of tracks that shouldn't sound this good. And if, you know, sometimes people talk about the quality of good audio gear, and we're sponsored by API, but that's, you know, that's like, it's so easy to talk good about their stuff because there's really nothing wrong. But it really, you'll hear it on this album because there's a punch and there's a warmth and a clarity that was achieved just by going in and re-recording and fixing some stuff. So if you guys go to armsofthesun.com, you can get their album. And actually, I made a deal with the band. And if you go to the store and if you enter the coupon code AudioNowCast, then you'll get 20% off. And you know what? Nice. These guys are independent. They're not on a label. I guarantee you, you listen to this stuff. If you like rock music, it's really great stuff. I just want to encourage everybody to go out there and to support these guys. And you know what? You get a discount, and it's not going to be hard for you to not buy it. So just go in and listen to it. But I do want to give those guys a plug, Arms of the Sun. The other thing I wanted to mention was that I got an editor who's going to help me with the Audio Nowcast Spaces, which is our video series. Yay. And we've already shot. I started shooting last December, and I've shot all these shows. It takes a long time to edit this thing. I am just one man.
I can only do so much.
So, but the good thing is I hooked up with a friend of mine who's a really good editor, so we're going to start rolling some of those things off. And also, guys, we've been, you know, it's been really busy for all of us on the podcast at the beginning of this year, this first half. Everybody is busy. Everybody's working. We've only been able to get maybe one show out a month. So now, but we're going to try on the second half to do a podcast every other day so we can catch up. No, we're gonna try to be a little bit more consistent. And we next podcast, I'm going to announce the winner of the Bobby Osinski book that we have going. If you want, this is the third show we'll talk about it. All you have to do is send in an email, and you can enter into the drawing. It's going to be Bobby Osinski's, what's the name of your guitar book?
It's a guitar book?
Yeah.
The Ultimate Guitar Tone Handbook.
The Ultimate Guitar Tone Handbook. And as many guys are going to be at that show, because I don't know who's going to be there at the show when we announce it, that, you know, we'll all sign it, and it'll be something that you'll look at and then wonder who these people are.
Nice.
Who are these guys?
Oh,
why did they ruin my book?
But I'll All you have to do is just send in an email. And by the way, you know what? If you send in your email, I'm not even keeping an email list. So it's not like we're going to send you any spam because, you know, for the podcast, have you seen our website? Do you think I'm going to...
That's the more honest proof that's right. ever.
That's right.
Where's
that's
the vibe?
That's right. I mean, really, there's no, you know, I'm not going to send you any spam. We're not keeping you in some database. We're not doing anything. I mean, I guess I should, right, Bobby? But we're not going to. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us, you know, on our Facebook and send us an email.
Yes.
But what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to tease you. I forgot about my Nair commercial that's running.
Oh,
that's it's very exciting. You know why?
Why?
Because they have the vintage, you know, actual commercial from, when was it, back in like the 70s? We wear short shorts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so that's cool. Cool.
That's your voice? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Cool. Well, on that note, hold on. Mental picture. Okay.
just checking the hair on the arm.
Maybe I need a bit of that. You know?
It's a gun show.
But that's about it. I know some of the other guys couldn't be here. Bobby's out playing soccer. I know Andrew's actually at West LA Music right now.
Yeah.
Giving a talk. And his career was taking off, man. You see him all over the place now.
He's been doing great.
He's been doing really good.
That's why he's not here.
That's right. Just
he's here in spirit. He's here in spirit.
Yes. Once again, guys, if you have any questions or comments, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Also, if you like us on Facebook, you can also reach us on Facebook and ask questions. And once again, I just want to thank everybody out there for all the cool things, all the cool emails, all the really nice messages you've been sending. Keep them going. And you know what? We need to find a listener.
We need one
Montana. Montana and Mississippi.
You know what?
Those are the only two states.
I've got Montana covered.
We have no listeners.
I have Montana covered. No
okay.
problem.
If you got,
one of my dearest friends. We need Mississippi.
Mississippi. And you want to hear something also kind
of
crazy?
The only places.
Yeah, in the U.S. But here's something that's really kind of crazy. On Google Analytics, we actually have more listeners in Germany than we do in the U.S.
All right.
So we gotta give. You know what? And that's
you know who needs to.
So the next
show
is going to be
technical.
That's right.
Tell you what.
Yeah.
We gotta give a shout out to Thomas.
Thomas Vance.
Yeah. And we got to the Musos because I know those guys. They're an awesome. If you know German, they're an awesome podcast. Way better than ours. just look at their website.
Please go take a trip to Voltas, though, okay?
That's all you gotta do is just look at their website. No, you know what?
It's all about vibe.
I will say, we've gotten some pretty good press and a couple little things, and man, I am so bad because I'm just so busy, but there's this group of podcasts that some guy has a webpage and keeps in touch with all the podcasts. He sent me an email, and I accidentally deleted it, but so hopefully he'll send me
along
again.
With all the emails.
No wonder I didn't get it.
So anyhow, all right, well, hey, we're gonna have to wrap this up, the world's longest podcast for us, but thanks for listening, and from myself and all the guys, we'll catch you next time.
Sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.